Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice, coming to you today live from glorious, exciting, wonderful, no, it's not Las Vegas, it's Atlantic City, New Jersey. That's right. Today we are at the New Jersey Police and Security Exposition in downtown Atlantic City. Now, if you've never been, you've heard a lot of stuff about Atlantic City. You know, it was really a great place back in the day. It kind of fell apart. Then it came back and we had casinos and then it wasn't so great. Well, it's okay. Atlantic City is okay. It's not a Las Vegas by any stretch of the imagination. You can have fun here. They do have some really nice hotels. They have some nice rock and roll concerts. They do have some really good acts here. The problem with Atlantic City is this. It is not a Las Vegas, but it prices itself like it's a Las Vegas. You know what? Because people don't have a lot of choices. You want to come to a place like this, you're going to have to pay $24.99 for a hamburger. You know, and that's the cheap thing on the menu. So it's really highly overpriced. You know, you got to, if I wanted a good gin and tonic, and you know what I'm talking about, TNT. If I wanted a TNT, one of Lieutenant Joe's favorites. If I wanted a TNT, that's going to be like $14 a drink. And the problem is, they're not going to put any tea in the tea. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be very light on the alcohol, mostly tonic water, and you're paying $14 for it. So it's depressing. It's not so great and amazing here that you don't mind that. It's not like when you go to a Disney park. You know it's going to be expensive if you go to Disney. Take your kids to Disney. It's expensive. But Disney is perfect. Everything about the park is perfectly clean. Every person who works there is excellent and friendly. And when you buy something, it's good. You know, so you really don't mind going to a Disney park because you know it's going to be expensive, but you get your money's worth. Unfortunately, here in Atlantic City, you don't really get your money's worth. And I'll tell you a funny story before I go into our conversation of the day and all the things I saw today, which is pretty cool, police technology, etc. My wife, Kathleen, and I came down here with a good friend of ours, Captain Donna Hernandez. Now, Donna has been on this program before. She's a retired police captain. She is a movie maker for Blue Force Films. If you ever want to go see some cool films, go look up blueforcefilms.com. And that's Captain Donna Roman Hernandez. Donna's been on this program a few times, and she'll be back again shortly, actually. We'll be doing a program in the next couple of weeks with her. The problem that we had was we came here and we stayed at, I don't want to say the name of the hotel. I won't say the name of the hotel, but we came in and Donna had a room. Her and her husband had a room and they couldn't stay. And I was here with Kathleen and, you know, Jim Giordano from the neighborhood, him and his wife Marisa were here. And we said, you know what, we'll take the room. You know, we weren't going to stay overnight, but we're already here. We're having a good time. We're having some cocktails. We'll stay overnight. We'll take the room. So Donna was very good, let us have the room. And she left with her husband, Jerry, very nice man. And we're decided, let's go and get some cocktails, right? Let's go down to the bar in this nice hotel and we'll get some cocktails. So we went down and it was interesting because I did order my TNT. And there was hardly any alcohol in the drink. Now, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't demand a full glass of booze. What I'm saying is when you buy a drink, you want it to be a drink. You want it to be worth your $14 a pop. And it wasn't. You know, the drinks were really, really very weak and watered down. Then we were sitting in part of this really cool bar area where there was nobody else there. It was just the four of us. There was a bartender and, a bar that seated probably 20 people. And then there were some tables, small tables, high tops, away from there. And we decided to sit at the high top and enjoy our weekend cocktails. Well, while we're doing it, there was only three chairs at the table. So Kathleen says to the bartender, excuse me, ma'am, do you mind if we take this chair? And she says, that chair is for the bar. And we looked around and said, yeah, but we're sitting over here and there's only three chairs. The chair is for the bar. I said, okay, well, could you go call someone and have them bring us another chair? We want to sit at this high top over here. So the woman was very nasty. I didn't like her attitude. She was nasty. We ended up getting another chair, and we had our second watered-down, ridiculous round of drinks. So you're talking like $50 a round for cocktails that don't have any alcohol in them. So it's depressing. It's annoying, and now you feel like you're getting ripped off. And that's the thing. You feel like you're getting ripped off. So we said, you know, what can we do here? We have a long night ahead of us. We wanted to get dinner. The hotel apparently had a great steakhouse. I mean, a lot of people said the steak here was fantastic. So we said, you know what? We'll try the steak. We will give the steak a try here in the steakhouse. But first, what are we going to do? It was early. So Jim and I decided, well, you know what? We'll go to the liquor store around the corner, and we'll pick up some wine and some gin and tonic, and we'll make our own in our hotel room. And we'll sit there for a couple hours, we'll relax, we'll get ready to go out to dinner, right? Seems like a normal thing, a little pre-gaming to go out and have some fun. So the ladies stayed in the hotel room, and Jim and I took a ride, I don't know, probably 3 blocks from the beachfront where the hotel was, and we see this liquor store. And I pull up, actually Jim was driving, it was Jim's driving, that's correct. We pull up, and I said, Jim, I'm going to go in, but this place looks pretty sketchy. And it did. The whole area around it was people just milling about. The lights weren't good. And when I looked into the liquor store, there was like a lobby where you went in. And then when you ordered your beverages, they were behind a big fenced-in wall. And the clerk was fenced in behind it also. So the people buying were in front of the fence, and everyone else was in the back. That's the first sign right there. That's called a sign. We saw a sign there that this might not be so good. And I saw this guy standing there, and I said, okay, and I'm looking behind, and I see the pricing on whatever, and I started figuring out what I got. Let me see what I got for cash. I didn't want to use a credit card. Let me use the cash. And I start counting out some bucks to see what I got, and this guy looks at me and goes, hey, mister. Now, this is the clerk behind the counter. And there's one other guy in there with me buying stuff. There's nobody else in there, but like I said, there's people, you know, walking by, looking in, floating by. He goes, hey, put that money back in your pocket, man. He goes, don't show that money. You'll get robbed when you go back outside. Now, I was shocked. Now, I'm a law enforcement officer. But at the same time, this was the attitude 3 blocks from the hotel that, you know, if you show cash and people see it, you'll get robbed. So I bought my booze. We went out, got in a car. We drove away, went back to the room. Now, that's the long part of the story, okay? So we had a couple of cocktails, and we enjoyed ourselves. And then we went down to go down and have dinner. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. We decided to go to the steakhouse in this really nice hotel, and we're walking in, and there's a young man standing there. Now, this had to be maybe 6 years ago, right, when we're doing this. And at the time, I'm 52, you know, Jim is 54, whatever. And this young guy is obviously in his early 30s, and he's dressed in a nice suit, and he's standing by the front door. And he says, hey, are you staying at our hotel here? I said, yes, I am. He goes, hey, could you tell me how was the experience? Are you enjoying it, having a good time? I said, well, as a matter of fact, let me tell you what happened to us today here at your hotel. And he listened. I could see that he grimaced and braced himself. And we went through the whole thing, and I was telling about the nasty bartender and how we didn't like, you know, the way she made the drinks and the way she treated us. And then I asked him a question. I said, hey, let me ask you something. Do you like T&T? Do you ever go out and have a T&T with your wife or whatever? He goes, yeah, I do. I said, you know what I love in my T&T? And he looks down at the ground and he shakes his head and he goes, Tanqueray, and your Tanqueray and tonic, right? I said, yeah, they're charging me $14 a pop here and they're not putting any Tanqueray in my Tanqueray and tonic. So I'm really disappointed. He goes, I know, I feel really bad about that. He introduced himself then and he said he was with the hotel and he was just doing a survey of some patrons to see what people were thinking of it. And he was sorry we had a bad experience, and he hopes that we would come back again and give them another chance. I said, oh, well, that was nice of you to say that. It was nice of the man to do that. So we went in, and we sat down at our table, and we're waiting, you know, for the waiter. Now, the waiter comes over, nice young man. He goes, hey, you know that guy you were talking to? Do you know who he is? I'm like, no. He said he worked for the hotel, but I don't know who he is. He is the vice president of operations for Las Vegas and for Atlantic City. He's a big deal, and he just told me, any appetizers you want are on the house. And we have some drinks for you, too. Well, with that, they brought over 2 giant glasses that I'm going to tell you were filled with Tanqueray gin and 2 bottles of wine for the ladies. And he says, that's on the house. He's sorry you had a hard time. He really, nice enough guy. Nice gesture. Very nice gesture. Well, I felt good about it, that he did the right thing. And if somebody heard me, and that's what we all want. We just want to be heard, right? So we fair to, and then the waiter says, listen, I'm going to bring out every appetizer. He said appetizers are on the house, so I'm bringing them all out. There's like 9 of them. I said, we don't need 9. He goes, you want to try them all? So they brought out a bunch of appetizers. It was really, really great. Well, as we're sitting there enjoying our cocktails now, our good cocktails and our food, I see this young man go out the door onto the boardwalk. And I really wanted to thank him for it was a very professional thing he did. He was concerned. He didn't like the way his customers were treated. And he tried to show some gesture that he was doing the right thing and taking care of us. So I said, I'll be right back. And I got up and I went out onto the boardwalk and said, excuse me, sir, can I talk to you? I said, listen, I really appreciate what you did. That was really very nice of you. And you know what? That tells me that maybe something in the future could be better. And the guy says, you know what? He goes, I argue with these people all the time that run our hotels. And they seem to think that by chintzing on alcohol, chintzing on the portions, chintzing on things is a way to save money and make money. Because they figure you're here. You have to eat. You have to drink. And there's no place else to go. He goes, and I keep telling them that's wrong. Because you won't come back. And I said, well, I got to tell you, I wasn't happy with this. You made it better, obviously. I said, but I don't think I would have come back had you not done what you did. And he goes, I appreciate that and thank you so much. So I go back in, I sit down. Now, we had a world-class dinner. Now, their steakhouse was really great. There was 4 of us eating, and we had, a really sumptuous meal. We had a nice desserts. We had coffee and dessert. We had an after dinner, a drink or whatever. And the bill comes out. When we're done, we ask for the check. And we figured it was probably going to be $300, maybe more. And the waiter comes over and he says, your entire bill is taken care of by that manager guy, that vice president. He said everything was on the house for you. Now, we looked at the bill, and the bill was $385 or, $390, something like that. So, of course, we tipped the waiter 25% of what the bill would have been. But that was a really great gesture. But I got to tell you, that left us feeling like really not satisfied with Atlantic City. It's not Las Vegas where everything is really cool and you expect to do things. You expect it to be expensive, but you don't want to feel like you're getting ripped off. And that's how we felt. So here I am today. I'm at the Police Expo, and I'm staying in another different hotel here in Atlantic City. And it's very nice, very clean. The staff is great. There's lots and lots of rock and roll memorabilia all over the hotel. It's really been nice. I think the staff has been really good to us and everything. And the rooms are very reasonable priced, and it's a big room. It's great. I'll be going downstairs to eat in a little while, and I'm not really sure how that's going to go. I have a feeling it's going to be another one of these bad experiences. But anyway, I just wanted to give you a little insight into a day in the life of Lieutenant Joe when we were out and about here in Atlantic City. And I'm not going to tell you not to come, because I know a lot of people do come down here, and they do love it. They think it's the greatest thing in the world. My friend Pat could go anywhere. He could go to Manhattan. He can go to Philadelphia. He chooses to come to Atlantic City because he likes it. He likes the nightlife. He likes the concerts. He likes the ability to go to the casinos. And, he doesn't mind. He's kind of a high roller kind of guy. He's not me. He's a high roller. He doesn't mind throwing cash across the table. But anyway, I don't want to, push you off of Atlantic City if you're ever out this way. Just be prepared. Stick with the big hotels and be prepared to pay a lot of money, and you'll have a nice time. Right. So what's going on here at the Police and Security Expo? What's really cool is that there's a lot of officers and security personnel from schools, businesses, and the local law enforcement community. And there's people from across the country here. I saw some Tennessee license plates in the parking garage. I've seen some contingents of people from Texas who were here. So it's a really big convention and expo because the technology is just absolutely outrageous. Some of the stuff that's available, the facial recognition, the plate reading kind of stuff, the drones. You got to see the drones they have here. Unbelievable. So I'm coming in from the parking lot this morning, and I'm walking in and I hear this mechanical kind of a sound. It was like this, but not exactly like this. I don't know what that was. I'm in the parking lot. It's kind of quiet. It's early this morning. And I look up, and there is a robot dog. All right, let me get that straight. A robot dog. Four legs with the metal body, and obviously it looked like a robot. It didn't look like a dog with a snout and all that. But it walked on four legs. And the handler, the guy that was running it, was using a control device, like a game controller. And he was about 10 or 15 feet behind this thing. And this thing was walking. It would stop and look around. It would lower its head. It got to the step, the curb, and it stepped right up on the curb. And it kept walking. It stopped. It turned around. It came back to him. It looked over at me. It kept going. Now, obviously, the handler was controlling the whole thing. There was nothing autonomous about this dog robot. But it was really, really cool. And later on, probably about an hour or so later, I came across this guy again. He's walking around the floor with this robot dog. And we had a nice conversation about it. And he's actually going to come on here. I'm going to interview him to talk about this technology, not today, but in a future episode. Because it's really so amazing. When he showed me the devices that it had on board, it had a nuclear device so it could detect radiation. It had chemical sensor on it. It had the ability to defuse or disrupt bombs, right? So you can use this piece of equipment if there was a suspicious package and it was up a set of stairs. You don't have to send a person. You could send this robot dog and it could go and based on its sensors and its equipment package, you can package it any way you want. This thing could do things. It could, disrupt a bomb. Now, I'm told that that's different than taking a bomb apart. Disrupting it means, maybe smashing it so it doesn't detonate or something. I'm not positive. We'll find out when we get this young man on the show in the next week or two. We'll find out all about this technology. It was expensive. There's no doubt about it. An independent robot dog like that. And it was the size of a good-sized German Shepherd. I mean, it wasn't a tiny little thing. It had to be three feet off the ground and 3 feet long. But it was amazing because it looked at you like a dog. It didn't have a head or anything, but it had camera lenses. And it would turn around. It would put its head down. It looked at you. Matter of fact, he was walking it around the floor, and somebody there had a police dog who was here at the event. And it walked up to the police dog, and the police dog was barking at it and didn't know what to make of this thing. And then it kind of bent down, like dogs bend down and look at each other. And it bent down just like that. And then the other dog wasn't sure. It was amazing. But to watch it go up and down stairs and all that kind of stuff, it was really, really cool. So that was here. That's here. Who else is here? Well, we got all kinds of gun manufacturers here. You can't buy a gun here at the show. I think you can order one, and then you have to make sure your permits are all in order and that, and then they would ship it to you. But there's lots of different kinds of weapons makers. And again, it's a police security convention, so you would expect to find those kind of things here. There are badge makers. There are there's a guy who I'm trying to think of what he was. I think he might have been an NYPD cop at one point, and he's written a book about the real Sopranos or something like that. And it was about a family, La Cosa Nostra family in New York that he did a lot of dealings with, and he was out there with his book, and that was really very cool to see all this different stuff. Then there's the cars, the police cars, like just unbelievable packages of equipment in these cars. The drones, there's one that they have, a law enforcement drone. It's not like the drone you see on TV, the little one that the kids play with. This thing is in a case that's mounted to the roof of the police vehicle. And when they activate it, this case opens up, this big heavy plastic case opens up. And this drone with five propellers on it is massive. This thing's got to be 2.5 feet wide, 2.5 feet wide, 2.5 feet tall. And this thing takes off, buzzing around. Got cameras on it, it's got sensors on it, it's got microphones on it, it's got red lights on it. I mean, you could basically do anything you want with this thing. So this technology, I find, is really, really very interesting as we move forward. The facial recognition stuff has gotten so good now that they really can differentiate between people and who's wanted. And it's a matter of your face, your dimensions of your face are so unique that they can actually identify you from a bank of data, because it's data points that it's looking at. It's not looking at your face like in a picture what it's looking at is looking at the data points of the distance between your two eyeballs, the distance from your eyeball to your ear, the distance from your eyeball to your chin to your top lip, you know, your lip, whatever. And it's those data points that are broken down into dimensions that's what the program searches for. It searches for those dimensions, and then it matches it up. And, I think they give you a couple of options. Here's a good hit. This one, we think this is the one, the software will tell you. But it could also be this one or that one. And then the operator has to make the decision, you know, who is this the person or not? So it's really very interesting. It reminds me, with the robot dog and this technology, how far we have come recently, but how helpful these robotics really are. You know, Tesla's coming up with a robot now, right? I think he's created a robot. Several years ago, I did an interview with a young man named Marshall Milligan. Marshall is a police officer, a SWAT operator out of Dallas. And if we'll all remember going back, it's going to be 5 years or so now, Dallas PD had an active shooter in their downtown, and five officers lost their lives. The shooter killed five officers and maybe some other people. I don't have the facts exactly right in front of me at the moment. It's an older case. But I was introduced to Marshall Milligan's father through Blue Magazine, which is a magazine I write for. Somebody says, hey, this guy reads the magazine. His son was involved in that and hooked us up so we could talk. So I talked to Marshall, and we did an interview together, and then we wrote an article. And what was so interesting about it was that in the course of that event, the active shooter, after he killed whoever he was going to kill, he ran to a parking garage. And he was in the parking garage, and he was basically holed up in there. He wouldn't come out. He was firing shots at people, screaming and hollering. And they were afraid he was going to go off and shoot more people. It was not safe to go in and get this guy. I think he had some military experience, and he probably had a lot of ammunition and weaponry. So what they did is they sent one of those robots, you know, a bomb robot that rolls, you know, kind of looks like a cart, and it rolls up there with a camera on it. And he was talking to the robot. You know, he was cursing at the cops and yelling at them. But he was actually allowing the robot to come up to him, right, get really close to him so he could see the camera. And he could see the cop's face on the camera, and they were talking to each other. Well, these cops decided to come up with, you know, what do we have to do? We have to stop this guy. This guy is dangerous. He's already killed people. He's not going to come peacefully. He may hurt more people, may kill more people. And a decision was made, a very bold decision, was made to put a bomb on the robot, send it up to this guy, and detonate it because the guy was letting the robot get close to him. And that's exactly what they did. They rolled a robot up to this guy, and he's screaming and hollering at it, and they detonated it. Now, that was a very effective way of dealing with someone who was that dangerous, was hurting a lot of people. But I did that interview, and Marshall Milligan was one of the people on the SWAT team that created that idea on the fly, got the equipment together, and went ahead with the activity. Now, I was amazed, being law enforcement from New Jersey. You know, New Jersey is a much more progressive, restrictive, liberal kind of an environment than Texas. And I couldn't imagine in New Jersey any police agency doing a plan like that. Now, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't, but in general, you know, this was like not a far-fetched thing for an officer in Texas to come up with. And apparently they ran it by their chief, and the chief says, hey, that's a great plan. Do it. We have to stop this guy. Where I can only imagine in the Northeast, you know, much more liberal kind of an environment, they wouldn't want to do that. They would want to do something completely different. It was bold and an interesting move, but it used technology. And the technology we had at the time was like a box with wheels on it, and you could control it with a remote control. That was the robotics then. This robot dog today, when I talked to the handler, and I believe his name was Corey Byam, and when I talked to him, I said, you know, with all that equipment on there, you could probably put weaponry on this thing. He goes, oh, absolutely. Machine guns, pistols, we can put all kinds of things on here. If the dog gets in a good position and the operator sees an opportunity to take a shot to stop someone who's shooting or doing something dangerous, we absolutely can do that with the robot. It's kind of like a drone on the ground, right? It's got four legs and it does whatever the operator tells it to do. It doesn't have any autonomy in thinking or anything. But the technology is just so absolutely amazing. And to see all of this stuff around us is crazy. Can you imagine, though, And here's where I want to link this to we're going to talk about Afghanistan a little bit and this terrible, terrible thing that's going on in Kabul and how America is just in such a free fall. I mean, that was my last show, right? That's what we talked about another episode ago was America in free fall. And I know a lot of you were tweeting it and retweeting it and listening to it, and I appreciate that. But the reality is the technology that was left behind, right, when the president ordered our troops out of there, you know, there's billions of dollars of equipment and technology. And I can only imagine that there's things there we can't even imagine that our troops were using. We know there was very sophisticated drones, not the little, you know, propeller drones, but the drones that fly like airplanes and can shoot missiles and all this and that. Those were left behind. Tanks were left behind. Aircraft was left behind. Helicopters, these combat helicopters were left behind. And thousands and thousands of small arms, you know, rifles and handguns and ammunition. And they are so empowered now in the Taliban. They have more equipment now. So what did they say? I heard a statistic on the radio that the Taliban, because of taking over the equipment that Joe Biden left there, they now have more Apache helicopters than most countries have. All right, listen to that. They have more Apache helicopters than most countries have because we left all this equipment behind. And why did we leave it all behind? We left it behind, I believe, and I've listened to a lot of the analysis and I'm trying to put it together. I honestly believe that the September 11th anniversary, when we were attacked on September 11th, it's coming up, it's getting closer. And I think President Biden absolutely wanted to have all of our troops out of there, the base closed down and everything done so that he could say, see, I got us out of there. I'm the guy that got us out by the anniversary of 9/11. And instead of thinking what's good for our country, what's good for our allies, what's good for the people who helped us in Afghanistan, he was thinking of it in a political mode. And you know, we'll be back in a minute with round two here on Chasing Justice.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health four times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, live from Atlantic City, New Jersey, which I guess in our first segment we talked about that enough to understand what that is. Hey, listen, what I want to talk to you about for a second is keeping ourselves healthy. How do we stay healthy? How do we fight the pandemic? How do we, even in general, how do you just stay healthy without fighting a pandemic? Well, I've come across Healthy Cell. Immune Boost, right? This is a tremendous supplement that I've talked about for a while now, and I don't think I even need to compare it anymore to what I've did before, what I didn't do. I've said enough that I like it, I keep taking it, and I'm going to continue to take it, and I think Miss Kathleen's also going to start taking it because she's seen my excitement about it, the results, and how it works. So Healthy Cell Immune Boost is really a tremendous product. They advertise on the station, All right. Lieutenant Joe gets nothing out of this. I'm just simply mentioning it because they're on my station. I tried it and I really like it. I think they have a great product and I think you should take a look at it. So let's talk for a minute now. Probably it's going to be more than a minute. Afghanistan. What does this mean to us in the long term? What does it mean in the long term? I think one of the most shocking things of this entire situation was a story I saw recently over the weekend where President Biden said, you know what, even though our deadline to get out of there is August 31st, I think I may extend the deadline a little bit so that make sure we get all the people out. And the Taliban basically heard that and responded and said, there will be no extension. There will be severe consequences to pay if you are not out by the 31st. Think about that for a minute. A terrorist organization is telling the President of the United States, you better be out of here, or we are going to inflict pain on you. Now that, in and of itself, if they were just talking, if they were one of these knucklehead nations that run their mouth and have no way, no ability whatsoever to do anything to us. You know, some of these third world dictators, obviously, you know, they can wreak havoc in their own country. They can cause problem in their own region, but they can't do anything to the United States, right? These people, the Taliban, we talked about maybe there's some Taliban people mixed in with the refugees all over Europe and maybe even in America. That could be a big problem because we can get anything over the border now. The open border is proving itself to be one of the biggest security concerns. You know, it's almost mind-boggling. And again, I'm gonna reach out and I'm gonna talk about Ted, my father-in-law, Ted. Ted sees the world through different eyes because he's been here for 88 years and he sees America what it was and he sees what America is becoming, and it's shocking to him. And when I hear him refer to it and talk about it, it's also clear to me how shocking it is because it is such a change in the way America has always been. When we look at the United States, could you imagine that these terrorists would say to the President of the United States, no, you're not changing any deadline. We're making the call and we're going to cause you great harm if you don't listen. In a world where someone, I'm going to say like Donald Trump was the president, I don't think the response would be the same. I think President Trump or other strong president, not necessarily just Trump, but another strong president would look at the situation and say, okay, we have between 5,000 and 11,000 is the estimate of American citizens, not to mention the umpteen thousand Afghans who worked with us over 20 years that are in danger, and they're still stuck there in Kabul. So therefore, we're going to make it a priority to get them out. Before we do anything else, we're getting them out. And it's simple as that. As the United States, that's what we're going to do. And you respond to the Taliban by telling them, you did a great job taking back your country from a military that ran away, that hid, a president that got an airplane and flew away. You did a great job taking that back. And you're powerfully brutal, and you will kill people on a whim. You'll kill women and children. You'll rape, and you'll do whatever. You're very, very powerful people. But we are the United States of America. And our people are not out yet. Our people are afraid to move through the streets of Kabul because your people are there. So here's what's going to happen. We are going to land 20,000 American troops into that airport, and we're going to have the equipment, and we're going to go out into the streets, and we're going to go find our American citizens. If you lift one finger against us, we will bring in 50,000 troops, and we're just going to go in and wipe you out. Now, oh my God, Lieutenant Joe, that's so horrible to wipe people out. That is so ugly, and that's so painful. Think about the world, ladies and gentlemen. How does the world, what is the Taliban saying to us? Are they worried about offending anyone? Are they worried about offending the people who are sitting in their basement taking notes about my show? Are they worried about the people who are sitting there quaking in their boots that American soldiers might, they might do something bad? No, they're not worried about any of that. they have power and they're not afraid to use it. Now, I'm trying to figure out a way to equate this to the same exact internal battles we have here in America. And I don't mean wiping people out here in America. What I'm saying is we have a Republican Party that is very powerful. And we have a Democratic Party that's even more powerful. And the Democrats are not afraid to use their power. They're not afraid to say what they want to say and then do what they want to do. They're not afraid of offending Republicans or conservatives. That's, matter of fact, that's a benefit if they offend those people. But the Republicans and those on the right, oh my gosh, they want to prove that they're good people. They want to prove that they're not going to offend it. They don't mean any harm. In the meantime, they get bowled over like they're not even there. You see, so strength is the key. Strength is what I'm talking about. Strength of your position is what dictates your success. So the Taliban are feeling very, very strong because they know Joe Biden is very, very weak. So therefore, they can say to the American president that with the stroke of a pen, the American president could order 100,000 American heroes into Afghanistan. And now we see all these people. We know where the Taliban are. We could wipe them out. Of course, we would lose people. But in the battle for freedom and justice and liberty, sometimes that happens. And I think our soldiers, they understand that. They are heroes. They understand that their lives are important to maintaining the American way of life. But a weak president won't do it. Why is it that the United Kingdom, France, and other Western governments are leaving the airport property in Kabul with their troops, and they're going to find their people and bring them back to the airport? Why are they doing it and American troops are not? Well, I think Mr. Biden, again, he's being political. If he sends American troops out into that neighborhood, there's a good chance there'll be some kind of a confrontation. And if there is a confrontation, the Americans are going to respond with force to protect themselves. We may even lose a few Americans in the response from the Taliban. But that wouldn't be good. It wouldn't look good for him that that happened. And therefore, we're not going to do that. So there's people, there are American citizens and Afghanis who have helped us who are cowering tonight in fear of the deadline of the 31st. What are they going to do after the 31st when they said, that's your day, you better get your people out? And they're not making it easy, but that's your deadline, and we're not having another deadline. You will suffer severe consequences. What are they going to do to those American citizens and those Afghanis that are stuck there? This is a terrible position to be in as a nation, as you and I, just people. We can't make a decision. We can't call up anything. It comes down to one person, our president. And this is why who the president is, what they are willing to do, their character, their strength, their understanding, their comprehension of the world is so important. We are so caught up in America with being woke and being offended and being upset and all of this other nonsense that the rest of the world not only is laughing at us, but now they're taking advantage of us. I mentioned last week, and I have to say it was exciting because I think I got out in front of it first. And you know, when you do a radio show where you write articles, it's important to be out first, because then if not, everyone else says, oh, you copied off of me, right? My first concern when I saw the lack of activity by President Biden with the Taliban was to say, could you imagine what the poor people in Taiwan are doing right now? Do you think they're sitting back going, hey, the Chinese come after us, America is coming? Do you think that they're thinking that tonight? Or do you think people there are starting to make their plans about when the attack from the Chinese comes, the takeover, there'll be no American response? What do we do? How do we protect our families? How do we get out of here? What do we do? They have to be thinking that tonight. If they're not thinking that, then they're not thinking properly. You know, it's one of those things when you can see something coming, no matter how potentially less than what it might be really be. I'm trying to think of how I want to word that. But you could say to yourself, okay, a burglar might come to my house. So what do I do? Well, I lock my doors and I lock my windows. I do something to prepare myself for in case a burglar comes. I don't leave my door unlocked because then when a burglar comes, was I stupid? So my point is that the people in Taiwan right now must be sitting there saying, we are all alone. Who's going to come to our defense? Do you see Joe Biden wanting to get involved in any kind of a conflict, a hot conflict? Ships firing weapons at each other, troops shooting at each other, Chinese versus Americans over Taiwan. Do you think he's actually going to sail the Sixth Fleet? And for my Navy people, I don't know which fleet's over there, okay? I know the Sixth Fleet's a big one, so I'm using that as a term. Do you think he's going to sail the Sixth Fleet on over there, or he's going to threaten China with dire consequences and sink their ships and attack them if they decided to roll into Taiwan tomorrow morning and take it over? No. And the world knows this. The world knows this. The people in Taiwan know it. The people in China know it. Frankly, I can't imagine that they're not planning already to do it. Like, what's a more opportune time than right now? He is frozen in Afghanistan. Can't do anything. Imagine if they decided tomorrow morning to invade Taiwan. Who would stop them? Would Joe Biden stop them? Would our friends on the left stop them? Would our friends on the right stop? No, of course not. They would scream and holler knowing that they couldn't do anything. See, that's what's interesting. You know, how many times did our friends on the right vote to overthrow Obamacare when they knew that it couldn't pass muster, that it couldn't actually get done? And then when they had the opportunity to really vote to throw it over, knowing a president would sign it, they backed away from it. No, we can't actually do that. They are weak. They are feckless. They are dangerous to freedom and liberty, both sides. Our friends on the left, they're very strong. They are empowered, and they are in power. They're not afraid to use their power. They don't care what you think. They don't care about going against the Constitution. They got half the country applauds them when they go against the Constitution. They're not afraid. Fear, my friends, fear, weakness, only invites more attack, no matter what it is. Don't we learn this in school? When the bully picks on you, no matter how big the bully is, if the bully picks on you and you give him your lunch money, he's coming back another day to take more. When you fight back, the bully decides to move on to somebody else that's not going to fight back. You might take a lump in the meantime, but that bully's going to move on. Well, that's what, at its essence, strength and weakness tells people, right? It amplifies what's going on. So we have to look and say, what good have we done for our country by having Joe Biden be elected? Because we don't have Trump's abrasive attitude. We don't have his tweets that nobody likes. We don't have the orange man to talk like every single day. If Trump had done any of the things that Biden has done in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, there would be 19 impeachment hearings going on. Are there anything going on? Well, one Republican put out some articles of impeachment that they're just going to laugh at and send away. It's weakness. It's weakness. We've said this how many times? Where are the Republicans standing on the steps of the Capitol screaming out, this is not right, we're not going to do it? They're not there. We are just as alone in America as they are in Taiwan tonight. We have no leadership. We're being pushed to a place we don't want to go. Freedom and liberty is only as strong as the men and women that stand up for it. Now, it's interesting. I said that to Kathleen tonight, and she's a brilliant woman. She really is. She is so much smarter than I am. And we were talking, and I said, you know what? When you look at it, the revolution, it's going to be another revolution. People talk about it. It's a lot of words. But the reality is, when it comes down to it, when they take someone away, when the government comes to take someone away, and you think we're far away from that, there's people out there saying they should hold you down and give you the vaccine for the COVID virus. Doesn't matter what you want. A former governor of the state of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, says, F your freedoms. You have to do this, right? We don't realize how close to that precipice we are, right? Demanding that you take this vaccine or you can't be a part of society. You don't think that's only inches away from them coming to get you, to take you to re-education camps, which some of our friends on the left have endorsed? If you believe in Trump and you keep thinking he's good, they should take you away. What about the CIA director, and I wish I knew his name, CIA director and national security guy, who came out and showed a picture of the Taliban and said, the Taliban, and then a clip of a Trump rally of pickup trucks with American flags and said, Trump, and he goes, and that's our Taliban. Because people are riding in a caravan waving American flags, which American flags now are a symbol of hate. People want to get rid of it, change it. Do you realize the precipice that we are actually on? And I brought this up and I said to Kathleen, it's going to take someone being taken away. So, right, she goes on and says something on social media and they come and take her away for her view. Don't we already silence people for their views? Don't we already come in and shut down their social media so they can't speak? Don't we ban them from speaking? Well, what comes after that? They come in the night and take you away. Open up your eyes. Look at history, people. This is how it goes. So I said to her, we're going to have to, if somebody gets taken away, then you're going to see people rise up in the street and fight. And she goes, really? Who's going to rise up and fight? If they came and took me because I said something they didn't like on social media and they took me away because of my hate speech, because I said, America's good. America is great. I love America and their flag is wonderful. And that's now hate speech. And they come and took me away. Which one of our neighbors do you think would rise up and attack the people who were coming to take me? And I said, sadly, nobody. Nobody would. I said, I would. I would fight to the death. But nobody else would. And that's where that old saying comes from. When they came for, when they came for the lions, nobody said anything. And then they came for the llamas, and nobody said anything. When they finally came for me, there was nobody left to say anything. And they just took. Now, I didn't use the exact saying there, but you know what I'm talking. You know, the thing, right? That's the reality of where we are today. Is that it's possible. Did you ever think that that was really possible? That was a potential that people could come and take you away? They want to make hate speech out of anything that disagrees with a leftist socialist agenda. And nobody raises an alarm. You're a conspiracy theorist, nutcase on the right. You're one of these people that want to storm the Capitol and you want to kill people if you stand up for America. They're winning the argument, my friends. They're winning the argument. They're winning the battle. And a lot of people, no, they're not. Lieutenant Joe, they're not. We're still running things out here. Really? They're still running things out here. See, they're incremental. The left and socialism are incremental. They fight for the long run. Just like who else we talked about a few weeks ago, the Chinese, right? They don't look at next year or the year after. They look 100 years down the road, and that's how they move. So does the Taliban. So do all these tyrannical types of groups. They don't look at immediate. They want little bites at the apple that they can keep biting into and chewing till there's no foundation left. And I ask you to look around. I'm not saying be a conspiracy theorist. I'm saying look around at the foundational platforms of America and ask yourself this. Are they being chewed away a little bit at a time? Can you go out today and say anything you want and have people, maybe they'll think you're a nut. Maybe they'll think you're too loud. Maybe they'll think you're brash. Maybe they'll think you're a lot of things. Can you go out and say anything you want today and not suffer any consequences? Or will there not only be people think you're brash, you're foolish, you're naive, you're stupid, you say ugly things? That's what people used to say back in the day. Maybe they didn't invite you to their party. Is that what would happen today when you say that? Don't people suffer real consequences? Don't they lose their jobs? People lose their jobs for what they said years ago when it comes up in the woke world. Because you thought it at one point, and therefore, if you don't agree with us, you need to suffer the consequences. This is what I'm talking about. This is a brand new world. And we're sitting here watching it happen, and no one is lifting a finger. No one is saying a word. And for you and me, sitting at home, listening to the radio, there's very little we can really do. We can write our congressman. We can, you can't really go to a rally. If you go to a rally that's pro-American, you're apt to get locked up or get hit with a bottle or hit with a rock. You're apt to lose your job if your face is on TV and they see you praising the American flag. Oh, my God. You could lose your career. You can suffer lots of consequences for being pro. So you don't think the world is different than it's ever been? See, it's these little incremental bites at freedom that our enemies take because they want to control. They want to control, and we have no one to fight back for us. There is no one. Our Republican friends are not fighting back for us. So strike that. There are a couple. Jim Jordan is a good guy. Governor DeSantis seems to be a good guy trying to do the right thing. But they are outnumbered, wildly outnumbered by the people that want to shut them down, that want to go after them, that want to use the courts and the governmental levers of power against them. You don't think they'll use them against you? You don't think they'll use them against you if you become too loud or if you have too much of a presence on social media and you're a pro? They'll shut you down, and then some government bureaucrat will be coming after you. Maybe a call is made to your boss that was inappropriate. Maybe there's an article written in the newspaper where they mention your name, and then you're out of your job. Is anybody going to come to your rescue and give you money, help you? No. This is where I'm at, and I'm frustrated because of it. I'm frustrated with where we are. I'm frustrated with what goes on. All right. Now, here's President Biden. He made a lot of promises. He said a lot of things during the campaign that he was going to be the most transparent. Is he the most transparent? Is his administration the most transparent? How about the third most transparent? Let's go. Is it the fifth most transparent? No, the answer is clear. They're not transparent at all. They tell you what you want to know, what they want you to know. They ignore other things. They lie about other things, and nobody calls them to account. And that, my friend, is how you get away with it. Because the average person out there is not paying attention like you and I are. Here in America Out Loud, we pay attention to this. We understand the Constitution. We love the Constitution. You know, we want the best for everyone in our country. But a lot of our fellow Americans are just really not that tapped into it. They simply see the value of the wokeness, you know, the fairness, the let's look back at our terrible things and let's fix them. They don't understand that what that leads to is a complete changing of what America is. Not fixing it. It's not about fixing it. You know, we see this and we say, the problem at the border. Are they so stupid that they don't see the horror at the border? No, they're not stupid at all. They don't see the horror at the border. They want that at the border. See, that's the difference. That's where people go wrong. They think, well, they mustn't really see it. They mustn't understand it. No, they do understand it. They do see it. It's part of what they want to do. You can't go to a restaurant in New York City. You can't do certain things if you're not vaccinated. But they're letting thousands and thousands of people in here undocumented with COVID, without any testing. They're putting them on planes and buses, and they're sending them to your community where you can't go out and get a restaurant dinner because you're not vaccinated and show proof, show your papers that you're... But they're letting thousands of Why would people do that? It's a very simple question. The problem is we are blinded. We are blinded by this because it makes so much negative sense that we can't imagine that people are really doing that. And that when I talk to people who see it, but they chalk it up to, well, they're trying to do the best they can. They're trying to help these poor people. They're trying to find a place for them. Okay, all well and good. Then why are they letting people in that have COVID that are not tested when you cannot do lots of things as an American citizen if you don't show proof that you've been vaccinated? That if you don't swear allegiance to the vaccine, you can't do things. but we can let thousands and thousands of people into the country, potentially maybe infected with COVID variant Epsilon, the next one, and that's perfectly okay to send them to your community, to the schools where your kids go. It's not a hatred about people of any color or race. It's about people who are coming in from places where they have this. We're fighting like crazy, our own citizens here, about this virus, and we're just letting thousands of people in, totally ignore the rules, just come on in, and we're going to send you to these towns and these communities. Why would people do that? That's the question, and we never get an answer. We never get an answer because it doesn't seem real. It seems too surreal that people would actually be like that. The president wants to do the best he can. He wouldn't. This is conspiracy that they're doing. Then why are planes landing in the Westchester County Airport in the middle of the night when the airport's closed and people are getting off going on buses? Who are those people? Where is CNN to be lined up out there with their cameras and see the airplanes land and want to demand to know? Who are those airplanes? Who are those people that got on those buses and where'd they go? Did anybody follow those buses? Who are these busloads of people in Westchester County in the middle of the night? Where are they going? Who are they? Right? We never ask that question. There's never that investigation. So my friends, we only have a couple minutes left here. And it's important for us to all consider these factors. There's a time and a place for talking about change and doing the right thing, right? If you find out that you're wrong, somebody brings to your attention, you've been doing something wrong or inappropriate, you need to be introspective. You need to look and be truthful with yourself and say, am I doing the wrong thing? Am I doing it for a wrong reason? And if I am, I have to stop doing it and I have to make up for it. But if you're doing exactly what you want, even though it's wrong, no matter how much they bring it up to you, that's a problem. And that's where we're at now. We're trying to knock ourselves out here to give the best of intentions to what we're seeing by our government officials when right in our face is the truth. Why would you be so concerned about this COVID vaccine and people getting COVID and the variants and everyone dying, going back to hospitals, and still leave your borders wide open and let people come in unvaccinated, untested, and disperse them across your country? Why? Why would you do that? Well, there's a reason. And the reason is obvious and clear. Our friends on the left believe that most of the people that they bring in here will be beholden to them for all the things that they give them, citizenship, one of them, that they will vote for them in perpetuity. In most of our elections are decided by 5 million votes, one way or the other. That's where, you know, that's in between, 5 million votes. So if we bring in 11, 12, 14, 15 million people and 80 to 90% of them are going to vote one way, we're going to swing that election one way or another in perpetuity. That's the reality. It's right in front of our faces. The media won't say it because they believe in it. They think it's a good idea. The rest of us see it and not really sure. We can't believe it. Nobody would really do that. Well, my friends, people really would do that. Look all around you. Look at what happened in Afghanistan. Look how the world sees us right now. Are we strong or are we weak? Simple question. Are we strong or are we weak? The answer jumps right at you, right off the page. Hey, listen, we're going to be positive. We're still America. There's still chances that we can save this. I don't know how, but it's going to be up to each and every one of us. So remember, be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. Think about these things. Ask the questions and be brave enough to look at the answers and deal with them. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. We'll see you down the road.